Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So, the theme for this evening and for Thomas to give consideration to and to feel strengthened by is a sense of commitment, clear commitment, and a manageable commitment to an inclination. So this is where we have to really check the assumptions. It's not about becoming a member of an order, or it's not about becoming in some institution or an ordination, or it's not anything. It's about committing to an inclination in one's mind and asking for support and offering to enter into a relationship of dependency, codependency, serving. Beautiful quality of human beings, our ability to serve that which we feel is good and right. Not because we're forced to, because we're paid to, because we want to. It's a volunteer, the most beautiful aspect of the human inclination. I do this for love. Yeah. And that service, and to serve something worthy. And also to be humble enough, modest enough to recognize we all need support. We need help, we need friendship. Referencing, so we live in a community where we can cooperate, operate together, step outside of our little personal box into something bigger, and care for each other, look out for each other, in many ways, simple ways, helping out, work, chores, chanting, listening, looking out to how one can support the general conduct of a situation such as this, which itself is quite open to whoever wants to be here, who's prepared to follow certain basic protocols that preserve harmony and order. So we're also part of something that's offering a service to the wider world. So really to redress the idea of monastery, religion, institution. This is a life of freedom and occasions where you follow an inclination and you heighten it and you make it clear and you meet people who understand that and you gather strength, because if everybody's inclining follow that same inclination, it's a certain strengthening of something in the human spirit. And then people from outside come in, participate in that, pick up the theme, find their own strengthening. So this situation, like a monastery, acts as a kind of a certain centre which specialises in a particular skill, set of skills, skills of the heart, skills of the spirit. And then anyone who comes in can begin to look at those, see those both as they play out externally. We follow routines, we follow precepts, we learn restraint, we learn to put things aside, external qualities, protocols, procedures. Internal qualities, we bring forth energy, we bring forth patience, we bring forth basic goodwill, not sentiment, but just the goodwill to look out for, to keep something going for the welfare of other people, and to get on with each other, which is, you know, in any situation is always a challenge. You know, families, how many families live harmoniously without arguments, quarrels? You know, how many groups, when you live together day and night, you know, how many situations can people do that in without finding themselves shutting the door, having a grudge against somebody else, or basically running out? And here we're training to present something, you know, with our own welfare. We can learn this. I can loose, I can let go. I can listen. I can be flexible. And if everybody's doing that, there's a certain strength that comes through that. And it's the strength of the soft. Yeah. Very much needed. The strength of the soft. The strength of the gentle. The gentle man, you know, rather than the brute, the bully, the soldier, the loudmouth, the pusher who pushes things, you know, gets their own way and dominates everybody else. This kind of quality in human beings, particularly in men, which is extremely destructive. Destructive to the human spirit, destructive to other human beings, destructive to values, destructive to the planet. The heart, the power of the heart. And then we're developing the power of the soft, the gentle, the spacious, the open, the trusting, the generous, the giving, the cooperating. These kind of water qualities that blend, that create harmony. Very important to understand that theme in a monastery. This place is extremely spacious. You know, you think of monastery restrictions, can't do this, can't do that, can't, not allowed to go here, no television, no drinking, no sex, no romance, and all the knots, but it's extremely spacious. In terms of, you know, offering, look, you know, there's food, shelter, you know, support, friendship, time for you to follow what you feel is really important. And if you feel what's important is what we feel what's important, what this place is about, then you're in. Doesn't matter. Character doesn't matter, you know. Nationality doesn't matter, you know. Intelligence doesn't matter. Physical strength doesn't matter. You don't have to be brilliant. Doesn't matter. If you've got that root inclination and you can resonate with this, you're in. That's amazingly generous to me, this inclination. There's something in Brahmacharya. Brahma is the sublime. Brahmas are is a technically a name for a particular very refined level of consciousness or refined level of realm. It's extremely spacious and subtle and suffused with goodwill. And permeating. So it's a particular kind of consciousness that's extremely uplifted, sublime, associated with goodwill, and not associated with grabbing, grasping, not even its relationship to the sense world is extremely cool. Because you don't see that the sense world is the best place to put your spirit. It's, you know, it's something we live with, but it's not the best place to put yourself. And so this is the thing to really get in one's, to know for oneself, because, you know, in the terms of the sensory world, of course, this is restrictive. Yeah, we don't do kinds of things that people would normally enjoy doing in a sensory way. We don't do this music, no. Yeah. Meals, yeah, enough, but you don't get to choose particular special dishes. It's just the food that turns up. It's okay, but it's not extremely interesting on a sensory level. You know, it's kind of boring on a sensory level. Same day, you know, kitchen, chores, pujas. It's not that interesting. But the point is, it's not supposed to be. The idea is that's something we just, you know, we encompass that realm with a quality of something bigger. We're much bigger than this. And this is what an ordinary person finds mysterious. How can you live a life of such restraint and seeming abstinence and yet talk about freedom? Yeah, and talk about openness and spaciousness when you're living in such seemingly restrained, cut-off, isolated life. You think, well, yeah. If you penetrate this practice with view and with effort and with attention, you'll get it. This sensory world is not that great. You know, you can tweak it around. Yeah. For one who understands it, see, if you want to get into the sensory world, it means, okay, you can spend your life polishing your chains. And some chains are better than others. And you can get some pretty nice chains if you want chains. You know, that's what the sensory world is. But essentially, what's it going to do? Comes, goes, takes energy out of you, and passes, and then where are you? And eventually, as you get older, there's less and less you can really get from that level. Yeah. And if that was all there was, then indeed, this would be a very miserable way to live. Particularly for a young person, because sensuality is kind of interesting when you're young. You know, sensory restraint at 25 is a challenge. At 65, it's not a challenge. Yeah. 25 it is. But once you do the shift, I think actually there's something much bigger and more blessed for human beings than the sensory realm. It doesn't mean you have to hate the sensory realm. Restraint is not hatred. It just means, you know, you've seen that. It goes that far. There's another channel that actually means you can operate through this system with qualities such as patience, attentiveness, sympathy, respect, generosity, appreciation, gladness. You don't need a lot of stuff for that, really. Stuff, in fact, kind of gets in the way of that. This cleaning, this simplicity allows the true light of the human spirit to shine through without being in a very clear way. So this is the inclination, the Brahmacharya. And it's something that's been going on who knows how long. Certainly it was around the time of the Buddha. It was a recognized feature of life, and people would do this for sometimes just for a night, every week. They just make that, they would touch in with that quality. Okay, remember this. You know, this is once a week, they do that. And some people take it up for longer. So it wasn't like a kind of entering the institution. It's following an inclination. And beautifully, that inclination is still so unblemished. It's still there for people. You don't have to be Indian or even Buddhist, particularly, to have that inclination. It is a feature of human beings towards the pure, the bright, the fearless, the loving, the spacious, you know, that which you really respect. But in Buddhist tradition, they've been able to keep a form, a convention that will actually convey that and keep it going. Yeah. And the beauty of particularly for Anagarika is you don't have the trappings. You're not some abbot or something like that. It's very pure in its simplicity. And you can take it on for a year. A year is a good thing to do. It's a reasonable number of times to give you a real feeling for you've begun to, you know, experience some of the challenges and get some of the fruits and really make a resolution. You strengthen a certain resolve for that. Some people in Asia, you can do it for a week. Some people do that. Just go to the monastery. Okay, you know, do this for a week. Just to sort of like give myself some bit of a training. Put aside some things. Clear the toys out of the room. Get on to what's really important. Often people find they've had their kids, they're 45, 50, enough. Finished, done that stuff. Finished with that, duties, they go do that, take up the brahmacharya. And it was considered a sort of stage in life in the Indian understanding. You know, if you're very early years, and then your apprenticeship, you're learning a trade, a skill. And then you have, say, 20 years or so when you really do your worldly stuff. You know, you build your house, you do your family thing, and then finished, you know. That's not the end. That's not the aim. That's just part of what you do. You learn a lot in that. You learn about responsibility. But then, okay, now you can focus on the main thing. Yeah, because again, you know, when Buddhism, you get a very big picture. They take birth and death into the picture. It's not like Korea. It's like our Korea is coming out of a womb and going into a grave. That's the Korea. That's the graduation ceremony. So what are you going to do about that, you know? So at the end of your life, you're thinking, hey, that made sense, rather than you kind of were running a railway for 25 years or something, and then, so what? So, finished. So now what you do? Play with your grandchildren, decorate the house, play golf, get old, fall apart. Yeah. But this, you see, then the cultivation of the spirit is such that, you know, even as you're aging, your spirit is not aging. If you train, this is the long picture, the big picture. You know, if you train in this, then your spirit doesn't age. Why should it? It's only the sense world that ages. The spirit actually gets brighter, clearer. And the understanding, this is very, you know, across all the traditions, this is the... We can drop this away. This can drop away and the spirit is going to be free. And that's a standard understanding through all these cultures and traditions. I don't think they were wrong. You know? We weren't trying to sell something. This is an opportunity. But a year, you get a feeling for it. You can see changes. And you don't learn to clear the house, say, okay, put some stuff aside. How much is really worthwhile? You know, what's really going to go with me through my life? Whether I'm job, career, whatever, you know, old, young, what's going to go through my life? Let's focus on that and put the rest of the stuff out of sight. Focus on this heart, awareness, spirit, what do you want to call it? I think now in Thailand you can still do this. You see, part of the culture for everyone to, or the men to do it, at least for a while. Women often do it after they've finished, you know, their family life. And or do it for periods of time, just for a week, a couple of weeks, 5 days, something like shave the head, go to the monastery. Everybody understands, part of the culture. And now, you know, beautifully enough, you can do it in Switzerland. It's amazing. There's something about this particular quality that everybody kind of gets it. You know, everybody gets it. And continually, it used to amaze me how much people understood what this was about. When I'm walking in America or England, well, they shouldn't know what it's about. They know what it's about. I say, good luck to you. Getting out of the chains. Good luck to you. I just want to help you. And that's sign. And even in official things, often you find that visas, easy. A bit of paperwork, but by and large it's okay. You can live without having to worry about taxes, money, job, pressure, future, promotion, getting sacked. Nobody got sacked for being an oligarchy yet. So it's also a tremendous kind of strange security in it. Because you're resting on something that is often not known, not really made conscious. There is a sphere of goodwill. There are good forces in the world. And you can call them devas, you can call them qualities of people's hearts. But when you make commitment, when you start to be as truthful as you can, and you start to put, particularly you start to put aside things, which could be fun, but you don't need, something starts to come towards you. You make commitment to precepts, suddenly you find it could be fun to meet some good people. You make commitment to renunciation, support comes your way. Something in the universe knows, and it comes, gives you some support. So it's amazingly supportive and secure in a way, and safe. There's no efforts to indoctrinate, intimidate, present flowery scenarios or optimistic, say this is going to be some work, some challenges. You know, what you see is what you're going to get. Us lot. Doing this. This is it. If you get it, you're welcome. If you don't get it, then this is all we got. It's clear. There's no salesmanship in this. We don't go out recruiting. It would be dishonest. Because it's about, you know, if you see it, you pick it up, you're part of it already. Yeah. You can do this now. This is great. Of course, you know, many people, look at sort of my associates and friends and people I've travelled along this way with, most more have left this fellowship than stay in it. But I don't recall any of them ever saying they regretted it. They said, I had other things to do, or but nobody said they regretted it or they felt they were sold something that wasn't honest. Every one of them said, yeah, it was good. You know, I learned something. Strengthened me. You know, because the fact, and this I knew myself from day one, I needed the quality of a convention that would actually just keep me focused, not distracted. Easy, so easy to get distracted by traveling, da da da, see this, go there, taste this, drink that, smoke this, go there, listen to this, and this stuff. You know, okay. Okay, where's it going? You know, just And it's so easy to get distracted from that holds you in a form. And Anagarika is great. I mean, mine was very tough because it went very, I wouldn't recommend people follow that. It was much too restrictive. But this gives you some space, a chance to see, you know, it's not, people are going to be on your back all the time. You have to do your own restraining as well. You keep your own precepts. You can, you know, nobody can be policing everybody. We work on honour and trust and self-respect. So you know what you're doing. You're the one who has to witness your actions. Don't expect everybody else to be looking out for it. This is a place to grow up. And with that, you know, it brings that up in you, a sense of conscience and concern. Restraint, conscientiousness, know yourself, be honest about yourself, take responsibility, serve, cooperate. These are ennobling qualities. And it's a beautiful sign. You know, sometimes I wonder why more people don't want to do it. Yeah, that's it. Just from the outside, it looks strange, but I've never regretted it. I have, on occasion, doubted whether I could really maintain it. You know, the restlessness, just the boredom, dreariness, right? Not being able to get fine enough, not being able to get focused, not being able to meditate clear enough. Whether I could actually do it was never entirely certain, but I could always respect it. And the beauty of community life is even when it gets tough for yourself, difficult for yourself, you look around, well, these guys have been there too. And, you know, have been in those difficult places and worked through it. And can give me some support with it. And that's also, that's what strengthens friendship. Yeah. The sharing of the challenge of liberating oneself from these attachments of the sense world, attachments to identity. Yeah. And you begin to see certain things that are not evident at first sight. You know, like the very idea, you know, when you step out of this, often people say, what are you doing? Wasting your life. You know, a young guy, you could be out doing all kinds of stuff. You could be getting a career, you could be making money, you could be a banker, you could be doing something useful for society, like being a banker. Which is useful for society, isn't it? Oh, yeah. You could be an engineer, which would be useful, purposeful, useful thing to do. Uh-huh. For what? There are tons of engineers and bankers already. You know, we're actually entering a situation where there won't be enough jobs for people because artificial intelligence and robots and automation will do it all. Then what we feel is the most useful thing is to cultivate the human spirit. And who else is doing that? Yeah, so the idea that a work or a job is the most important thing is a huge piece of mythology that's we get indoctrinated into because, of course, yeah, guess why? You know, the money-making system wants to get more people on the treadmill. So yeah, it's great on the treadmill. You really enjoy it. You know, don't worry about the alcohol and the nervous breakdown. You'll enjoy it. That's not the way. Most important thing. Birth to death, look at that. Have you cultivated that which can go beyond that, that which stays with you when everything else changes and passes? And this, of course, is, you call it meditation, but this is a little more, yeah, it's meditation, but it's not like, you know, do a few exercises, meditation exercise, focus on your breath, do a retreat. No, it's a bigger way of meditating. It's a more open way of meditating. It's a more thorough way of meditating. It's, what are you doing? Just keep checking in. Your assumptions, your attitude, your fears, your blind spots, the places where you think your compulsions, yeah, mental creations. I've got to, I don't, I'm not. Mental creations. Yeah. How long? Time is a mental creation. Yeah. Identity is a mental creation. It's not something that inherently has to be there. And it limits you. Keep checking in with how your mind is actually creating limits for you, imprisonments for you, with all the sense of I am, I'm not, I'm not good enough, I should be, I could be, what would I be? What are you talking about? What is that? That we're so addicted to. A ghost. A hungry ghost. The possibility and practice, finding some ways where you begin to acknowledge that energy and that compulsion and that attitude. See where it goes. See where it goes. I tell you, it could, well, I've seen it. It goes to suffering. Once you start to conceive of yourself as a separate entity living in one of these things, you don't have to keep thinking that. Once you conceive that, follow that line, you're going to find out, you're going to get to suffering. I don't look right. Yeah, or I'm not what he is, or what do people think of me, or what will I be, how will I be? Once you conceive yourself like that, you're in this trap. But we don't have to conceive of ourselves. More accurately, the meditation is notice the inclination of your mind when it's hungry, when it's frightened, when it's desperate, when it's lonely. Notice that. And develop this loving space around it. That's direct. Develop this sense of, you know, real grounded love. Not sentiment, but just a sense of space and non-resistance and compassion. And this is the quality of the Brahma. The Brahma is this is what it means. It means that which offers huge amount of space to these frightened, tense, nervous, agitated conditions that we end up concocting ourselves out of. We don't need to do that. You follow those with your mindfulness, your attention, you follow those inclinations. Where's that going? Can you wrap your awareness around that? That worry, that doubt, that anxiety, that feeling of inadequacy, and soften, relax, soften, soften. It's okay, everybody gets this. This kind of concoction is not personal. It creates a person, but it's not a person. It's a common thing we all experience. Yeah. Self-consciousness. And you can know that, you wrap your awareness around that, feel it in your body, breathing in, breathing out, just keep letting it subside. And it will do that, because we actually are bigger than that. We don't have to drive ourselves into these narrow, tight boxes and expect them to be fulfilling, and feel we miss, you know, and then feel what's wrong with me, I can't find fulfillment in this. It's not fulfilling. That's where you can't fulfill. You can't find fulfillment in it, because it isn't. This is the spacious life, the brahmacharya. That's the thing, that's the irony of it. A life of seemingly restriction is a life of great space, because it offers you the possibility, restraint, focus on that which really restricts you. And it's not the walls of a building, it's the walls of the heart. This is the place where we begin to widen that, come out of restriction. Otherwise this will be, why bother? Yeah. So this is the possibility, and certainly if one makes a resolution, every resolution that's made based upon virtue and renunciation is a noble gesture. It's something you look into your mind, you see this is something, if you sustain this for a year, then you have sustained something beautiful, and that quality of that will stay with you. The results of that will stay with you. The dignity and the respect and the clarity will stay with you. And it may be that through this it enables you a chance to meditate, to look into to the roots of suffering and stress and release those. I sincerely hope so. Because it always gives me great joy to see people working their way out of their fetters and difficulties. So this is our friendship, this is our fellowship, and we welcome Thomas in. And anyone else you'd like to sign up, you can make a quick conversation with the Chikana Siri, and we'll see what we can do.
Mangamayam Govardhita Sadhukaram Dhammase Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.